Jeff Blair alongside Mike Wilner, joined now by Shai Davidi. The Jays making news very early this morning, signing Steve Pearce to a two-year, $12.5 million contract, effectively closing the door, one would think, on Edwin. Mr. Davidi, how are you?
I'm well. What's going on?
Last night, sitting here waiting to leave. Shai's going, I got to work. I might be able to nail down Steve Pearce.
Just for definition's sake, can we say that that means he might be able to confirm that the Blue Jays are about to sign Steve Pearce?
Yeah, what did you think it was, nailed down Steve Pearce? What?
Just wanted to make sure everyone understood.
What do you make of the signing?
This isn't necessarily a surprise because he's a guy they've had some interest in since really early in the offseason. I mean, this definitively, you would think, shuts the door on Edwin Encarnacion.
Yeah.
And we got that sense last night during some conversations that we had with people that, you know, it was over for the Blue Jays with Edwin Encarnacion. And really, this isn't the end of their business. This is a precursor. Does this mean the Blue Jays still have one more big move in them, or does this mean they go piecemeal in the outfield corners and everywhere else? And that's what I'm interested to see. Just as a guess, you know, $12.5 million, it's a $6.25 million roughly hit on the payroll for 2017. With once you factor in the arbitration projections, that leaves them about $130 million for 15 guys. You know, if they're at a $160 million payroll, it leaves them with $30 million to spread around their 0-3 service time players, a couple relievers, backup catcher, and the outfield corners. So it looks like they may be going with spread the wealth type of approach as opposed to looking for one primary piece.
Would you see them? I know this is kind of impossible to say, but we've talked a bit about going into the trade market as well. Do you see them doing that to try to finish this off?
I think everything's possible right now. You know, the Jay Bruce, who's been rumored as a possible fit, I'm not sure that they're in on him or Curtis Grandison at this point. But that market, I mean, really the type of deal that the Jays would be really looking to make would be taking somebody's money back without giving up a prospect, is they really want to try and protect the prospect capital that they do have and try to work around this gap they have between Double A and the majors in terms of having prospects who can make the jump and contribute in the near future. So I can't see them, unless something really falls into their laps, making any sort of a deal that isn't taking money. And, you know, as they keep on making moves and more of the money gets spent, they're sort of limited in terms of what they can take back.
It's interesting because we all still think that they have targeted Dexter Fowler, that they would love to have him come in here at the top of top of their lineup. I've heard $15 million a year over four. I've heard $18 million a year over four. If the numbers that you're talking about, $30 million left to spend, $5 million to go on 0-3, that leaves $25 million. If you sign Fowler for $18 million, that leaves you $7 million to sign a backup catcher and fill out your bullpen. And it leaves you a little naked in one corner outfield spot, unless you're using Steve Pearce there against righties while he plays first base against lefties. Is this sort of a corner that maybe they're painted into here?
That may be the reality. I mean, they're not going to be able to be uber prepared for every outfield spot. I think one of the attractions to Steve Pearce is the positional flexibility, and that's something that the Blue Jays have been looking to get this offseason, was to have some players that gives John Gibbons some options to mix and match in different spots and allow him to do different things in-game to secure himself the ideal matchup and under certain scenarios. So, yeah, I still think that they could get Dexter Fowler and fit him in, but they will have to make sacrifices elsewhere. But ultimately, the decision that the Blue Jays are weighing right now is what package is the best one? Is it spending big on one guy and then going really, really small in other areas? Or is it more evenly distributing the wealth, and which one gives you a more full and complete roster?
Where do you see Steve Pearce fitting in the lineup, the batting order, things of that nature? How do you see John Gibbons using him?
Well, against lefties, I'd expect him fairly high. I mean, this is a guy with a career OPS of 852 against lefties. It was 1,000 and change against lefties last year. So, I mean, this is a real impact bat. So
the word myrtleized has been used.
By you, obviously.
Yeah. How'd you guess?
Yeah, just, you know, shot in the dark there. So I would think that, you know, we'd see him maybe fourth, fifth.
Middle of the order against lefties, for sure.
For sure. Mm-hmm. And when he's playing against righties, I think it's going to be further down just because he's not as effective. And, you know, if they are committed to Justin Smoak, and, you know, Mitch Moreland has been suggested as someone that the Jays are targeting. Now, was that just a tactic to try and, you know, convince Steve Pearce to take the contract? I mean, that's a theory that's floating around right now. But, you know, if the Jays are committed to Justin Smoak, Justin Smoak's probably going to be hitting 7-8 somewhere in that range. You'd think that Pearce would slot into that spotting his righties.
You know, are we maybe overlooking something with the bullpen? I'm wondering if maybe as part of the way they address the bullpen, if they don't take somebody like Connor Green and try to work in one of their big young arms as a reliever.
I would be surprised by that. Very much. I think that when you have like a 21, 22-year-old potential starter, that's
worked with
especially
Sanchez.
when you look at how the Blue Jays tend to see, you know, building this future and having as many young prospects as possible, major league ready guys as possible, you're right. It worked with Sanchez, but it made you have to kid glove Sanchez this year.
Yeah, true.
Mean, that's what I was going to say. I mean, did it really work with Sanchez? I mean, it nearly forced you to pull Sanchez out of the rotation to interrupt a season in which he was starting. And it essentially stunted his development for a couple years and kept him from getting where he needs to be. My guess on that is that this regime is going to approach player development in a much more conservative fashion than they did under Alex Anthopoulos. We won't see them push a young guy like Connor Green. He's going to go every step progressively, get his innings in at each level. I think that's going to be the general consensus for all prospects, unless someone absolutely, completely forces their hand. And the one guy who I think may be able to do that this year is Rowdy Tellez, if he just completely rakes at Buffalo. And I think to a certain degree, Tellez is in the Blue Jays planning here because they didn't want... There's a degree of making sure they didn't block him too much. And, you know, with the extension for Smoak and Pearce, he's not blocked.
No,
not at all.
Do you think the Smoak contract is movable?
They'd have to eat some money. I can't see anybody taking on all $8 million. They'd have to eat some of it, I would guess.
Back to the Fowler thing for a second, because it seems like the Chicago White Sox have come here in sell mode. And that would mean that Adam Eaton might be available. You have to kind of balance your thoughts. You have to give up stuff to get Adam Eaton. But you're also giving up a first-round pick to sign Dexter Fowler. Where do you sit on that scale?
My understanding is that there doesn't seem to be much traction between the Jays and the White Sox right now. I mean, unless the White Sox are looking at the market and are saying, hey, yeah, we'd like... you know, these guys, or we can't get the guys we really want, and they're circling back. I don't think there's any traction between the White Sox and what the Jays are willing to give up from their farm system.
What would it take for the Jays to move Marcus Stroman?
Lots of help.
In the offseason.
Young, cheap, controllable, and already in the major leagues and good.
Yeah, so I think it'd have to be a guy similar service time, similar cost, and... someone with similar upside.
Who's already succeeded in the major leagues.
Right. And I don't think that's going to be... I think it's going to be very hard for the Blue Jays to move a starting pitcher. And, you know, you would think that, you know, sort of the area of strength, that's the one area, but they don't have surplus there. And they can't replace those 200 innings easily.
Right.
You know, those 200 innings aren't out there on the market. And
they're already looking at having to replace those innings as it is. I mean, they have Liriano to replace Dickey, but the fact is you're looking at trying to replace the minis.
Well, I think you've got five guys who have the potential of throwing 200 innings each. What I think you have to cross your fingers on is that they're going to stay healthy again.
Right.
Especially Aaron Sanchez after reaching 200 innings or 190 whatever.
And that's the thing with Sanchez, people need to remember, is that, you know, he's not, I don't want to use the phrase out of the woods,
nope.
Because that's...
Nobody's ever out of the woods.
That's, yeah, exactly. But there is a chance that the Piper's will end up being paid this year for what happened last year. I mean, you have to at least have that in the back of your mind if you're the Blue Jays.
Well, and the thing is they've had remarkably good fortune over the last few years. I mean, they haven't had a significant pitching injury to a starter in a while.
There hasn't been an arm injury to a starter since those Tommy Johns to Hutch and Drabek.
Hutch and Drabek,
so,
right.
Maybe the Blue Jays have discovered something. We know they've been very careful. They've gone to six starters on occasion to try and build in some extra rest for their starters. They've been very conscious about workloads and managing between outings, pitches, and all those things. But the reality is there are hundreds of arm injuries to starters every year, and you know you certainly hope it doesn't happen, but you can't continually count on having that good health. And if you thin out what's already a thin crew, because the Blue Jays don't really have a number six right now. Joe Biagini is essentially their number six, and they may need him desperately in their bullpen.
Right. If you're spending on an outfielder and building your bullpen on the cheap, Biagini has to stay there.
Right. And all the other factors, you know, you talked about being thin in the outfield corners and things of that nature. The thing that may be most worrying is that the Jays don't have starters 6, 7, and 8 right now in-house.
You can always find a Justin Germano and a Tomo Oka and a, you know, guys.
Not if you want to win.
Well, if you need to spot them.
You can also find the odd Scott Diamond.
Yeah, but I mean, division-winning teams give 12 to 15 starts a year to guys who suck, generally. Minor league call-ups, they do. I mean, if you look at it, they do. They're terrible. And the Indians did, too, and
but they seem to suck less than the guys the Jays bring up. Do you ever notice that? I sound like a caller in your show, don't
you
I?
You do. Hey? And I'm going to have to refute you.
Well, I mean, even still, the Jays don't have anyone who sucks. They don't have anyone right now.
No, but they will.
The
I mean, there will be minor league free agent signings, guys who suck.
But the thing is, what if you need... But if you take out Marcus Stroman from the mix... You're already
without getting a starter back.
Then you're already having to cover that.
And you wouldn't get a start. I mean, if you're going to take Stroman out, you're going to take him to get a young position player.
Right.
You're because not going to.
No one's doing young starter for young starter.
Yes.
Cleveland Indians, the American League champions
last year.
Here we
go. You and your facts.
9 starts to Cody Anderson, 6.68 ERA. 10 starts to Mike Clevinger, 5.29 ERA. And Ryan Merrick
got
one short start.
Clevinger is better than anybody the Jays brought up.
But the Jays didn't bring up anybody except
Hutchinson.
But what I'm saying is the Indians gave 19 starts to two pitchers who combined had an ERA of 6.
They also,
but ERA is
still
overrated.
Won the division. They also lost Carlos Carrasco and
No.
They were really making it up
the
as they went
right.
along.
But you can start.
In a garbage division.
You can
don't
plug
forget.
In pitchers for a dozen starts
in a garbage
a year
division, not in the American
suck.
East.
I can let you guys sit back and argue.
You want to go over Boston's fifth starters?
Yeah, here we go. It's well, Wilner and DeVita going at it in the Blair Show.
You're talking about the league best offense, right? Too
right. I'm saying that cobbling together your seventh, eighth, ninth starters is not the end of the world
for 10 to 15 starts. But if you need it for more than that, that's where there should be some.
Boston
concern.
Gave 6 starts to Joe Kelly,
but
5 to Henry Owens, and 4 to Sean O'Sullivan. Combined ERA over 6.
But they didn't
15
win.
Starts. They won the division.
But they didn't go to the World Series. Yeah,
but none of those guys pitched in the playoffs.
What happens to Batista? What do you think?
How screwed is he now?
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it.
With the double qualifying taken away, how much does that screw up his market that whoever signs him can't give him a one-year deal, qualify him next year, and get the pick back?
I don't think that's the primary concern. For him, if he took a one-year deal, I think any team would be looking at it as like, hey, we've got someone who's been one of the premier sluggers in the game on a one-year deal with no long-term commitments. I don't think that's the primary issue hurting him at any. What's hurting him right now is that there seems to be a reluctance to bet on age in multiple years. Right, and that what we're seeing, everybody seems to want that one-year deal. We saw it with Beltran, we saw it with Holiday, and the markets for both guys were pretty robust because there was a lot of competition for them. The Red Sox, if you seem to believe, I mean, the signals that they're sending out is that and this is what everybody in the industry seems to believe, that they're not spending, they're not going beyond multi-years on anybody. So, I mean, are they looking at Mike Napoli? Is that going to be their get for first base / DH? I don't know. I think Jose Bautista is going to have to wait a little bit, and the market for Edwin Encarnacion may have to wait as well. I mean, if not Texas, I don't know who's signing him at this point.
Tell you what, 4-20 looks good right now, doesn't it?
It really does look good right now.
If you're Edwin.
Are we wrong to completely dismiss the National League for both Edwin and Bautista? Jose Bautista can play first base.
I'm in the minority here because I think it's wrong to dismiss the National League.
I do, too.
I think for Jose Bautista, it shouldn't be dismissed at all. I think for Edwin Encarnacion, if you're buying in the National League and you're saying, I'm going to get 140 games out of him at first base, well, he hasn't gotten to triple digits in games since 2008 when he was a third baseman. And you're going to ask him to take that jump, as a, you know, 30-40% jump in his workload at age 34. If I'm a National League team, I may do it for 1 or 2 years. I don't know if I'm doing it for 3 or 4.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that bat, there'd be a National League team that would take a chance on that bat. I really do.
Like Shai said, though, I mean, he hasn't even played 80 games at first, right? In 8 years, he's still, as much as he played last year and as good as he looked last year, he didn't play half the season in the field, and he's still got a bad back.
Yeah.
And he isn't getting younger, and I think that's what's hurting him. So, you know, the Texas Rangers are prioritizing a center fielder right now, and all indications are that it's Ian Desmond, and that was a good combination for them last year. They seem to really like one another. And so you'd figure that's going to end up working out. But if for some reason it doesn't, and Texas all of a sudden has a bunch of money to spend, maybe Eddie's their guy.
As it stands right now, could we say unequivocally that Edwin and Jose's agents have screwed up here?
I don't think we'll know until they've got their final signing spots, right? And, you know, I mean, last year it looked like, hey, Chris Davis had screwed things up, and Scott Boras had screwed up things up with Chris Davis, and he wasn't going to get a home, and who was going to sign him, and he ended up getting his money in the end. So it's still possible that there is some money out there. There's some team that is going to be the music's going to stop. They're not going to have a chair, and they're going to have some money to spend, and they're going to turn back to one of those two guys.
And teams can always make a deal to open up a spot for a guy they like, too.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
but
when
you say did the agent screw up, is the screw up for Bautista not taking the qualifying offer and for Edwin not signing the 4-80 when it was offered?
I think more Edwin than Jose, to be honest.
Right.
Four and eighty is not
4-80 at a place that you like.
Yeah,
which wasn't necessarily far off where you're probably would have ended up.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be some questions.
Is that an agent who, and you guys both know Paul Kinzer, I don't. Is that a guy who didn't have a sense of the market, didn't do the clandestine work that whispers that nobody's supposed to know that you're doing to see what kind of stuff's going to be out there?
That's a good question. I can't answer that right now. What I would say is that I believe the Encarnacion camp expected the Boston Red Sox to be a lot more in than they were, expected the Houston Astros to be a lot more in than they were, and neither of those markets really developed the way that they probably anticipated.
And I don't think we'll really know until maybe general managers feel free to talk about it later in the year. But I also think that slight uncertainty with the CBA it really added an air of caution to things, and I don't think it fundamentally changed. I mean, if you're the Houston Astros, you're going to need what you're going to need, and you're going to get what you're going to get. But I think in the case of a team like the Yankees, in the case of the team like the Red Sox, it did at least give them pause to think. And if you don't have those big teams out there driving the market, it's a little harder to do business.
You know, the other thing, too, is that there are a bunch of teams in the American League who are looking to move some money, you know, the White Sox, the Royals, the Cleveland Indians can't take on money. Baltimore Orioles don't seem to be taking on any money. So that's limiting your primary league right now. Mm-hmm. in the first place. So that's a significant factor as well, that, you know, even though there is a new CBA and, yeah, the revenue sharing formula is changing and it looks like some teams are going to end up with more money, some teams are going to end up a bit less, you know, that's a significant piece to this puzzle as well.
Speaking of the Orioles, we had a member of the Baltimore media come by, try to grab you, solicit you to do a show.
Yeah.
And he mentioned Michael Saunders as a possibility for the Orioles. Have you heard that?
I mean, because he lit them up last year.
Yeah, he has, which is great, providing they could, you know, send the pitching that he lit up someplace else, too. That's like the dumbest thing ever. We got this guy because he beat us up.
He killed us, yeah.
Yeah.
If he faced Orioles pitching.
That's right.
I was, you know, it's, we haven't heard a lot about Michael Saunders' market to this point, which is interesting because I'd gotten the sense early that there were 6 to 8 teams, or I was told there were 6 to 8 teams that had a pretty good interest in Michael Saunders out of the gate, and they were thinking that a 3-year deal might be possible back then, and then everything's sort of gone quiet for a month. And this is one of the first things we started hearing about a team connected to him. It's interesting. The Baltimore Orioles are always seeking value, right? So they're waiting for someone's market to not develop the way it should, and then try to get him at a 1-year deal at or maybe just below market rate for a guy who's looking to try and rebuild himself. So if Michael Saunders ends up in Baltimore, it's certainly not going to be the deal he's probably wanted. But again, he may have to, you know, it may be in his best interest to take that 1 year, try to get the most he can over a single year, have a big season, try to, you know, replicate over the second half what he also did in the first half, and then go back to market a year from now.
Which is why the Blue Jays didn't qualify him, because there was no way he would say no to that.
Right.
Oh, no. I mean, he would absolutely have to take that.
Right, because no one was going to beat both the qualifying offer and surrender a draft pick.
Mr. Davidi, I'm going to let you run and do some more work. I know that you're servicing several outlets. You'll be on TV throughout. We'll actually all be on TV throughout.
Yeah, we'll
the
all be on
meetings.
TV throughout. First
Thursday.
First is noon on Sportsnet 360, Shy and I with Jamie Campbell. And then you and Benathan at 1 o'clock.
Me and who?
Ben Nicholson-Smith.
Did you say Benathan?
I did.
He did.
So this is what I'm going to have to put up
with. Blair's going to love having me around all week.
4 days.
You know, that there is a ledge just behind you.
Oh, I know. Believe me. I've been doing the mental calculations.
Pull him over at some point.
I've been doing the mental calculations. But, no, we'll be okay. Shai, thanks for doing this, man. Appreciate it.
You got it.